Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Welcome to the D Word, glad to have your company. Dementia-friendly community is a term regularly used in an attempt to integrate people living with dementia into their local area. My guest this week has taken that concept one step further by introducing dementia-capable communities. Laura Middleton is Chair of Dementia and Active Ageing at the Slagle Research Institute for Ageing in Ontario, and she'll be joining me right after this.
I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart. It's not so much the things you say to me, it's not the things you do, it's how I feel each time you're close to me, that keeps me close. I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart. It's not so much your pretty face I see, it's not the clothes you wear, it's more that special way you look at.
Fall and You Are the Woman, kicking off this week's D Word. We're going to be talking about dementia-capable communities with my guest, Laura Middleton. Laura, great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word from lovely Waterloo, Ontario there, and the Slagle Research Institute, which I had the real pleasure of visiting last year. You're Chair in Dementia and Active Ageing. And, I mean, how did your whole interest in the field of dementia start?
I think, like so many people, it comes from personal experience. So my aunt was diagnosed with young onset or early onset Alzheimer's disease. She was 46 when she was diagnosed. And, you know, I was just starting university. And, you know, my cousins, when my aunt was diagnosed, was 12, 14, 16. Like so many people, that's a profound impact in the family. And I look back and I think, oh, well, of course we all want to prevent dementia. And that's where I started. And then I look back and I think, oh, if she could have only had more supports too. You know, she still went out and she walked in the bushes and she went to classes, but she also didn't tell her neighbors that she had dementia because of the stigma. And so it's really, that's what drives me. And now I've met so many incredible people living with dementia that have influenced my own thinking since then. But that's where it started.
Yeah, it certainly does, doesn't it? I think we've been on a similar journey with that. I mean, I've been doing the show 7 years now. I met some absolutely amazing people, some of whom we actually know mutually, don't we? That we've both met. Dementia capable communities. Now, words mean a real lot, and the word capable is in there. I mean, take us through that.
Absolutely. We had a lot of reflection on what was the right word to use. Often dementia friendly is probably the most common term. And we thought, okay, yes, of course, but that feels like a bare minimum, is that people are kind and friendly to people living with dementia. And it didn't feel like enough. And then there's dementia inclusive, and we thought, okay, well, that's a bit better. Yes, we want people to be included in their community. But we really thought that the option of dementia capable, and Kate Swoffer had an article about this, and so we read that and reflected on it. We really want a community that goes beyond including, because that's still like a nice. Okay, yes, we will make sure you're included. Okay, that's a step up from friendly, but it's really not everything. It should be fully capable of allowing people living with dementia to fully participate, belong, be supported, have their needs met without all sorts of barriers to participation. And so we went with the word capable because we thought moving beyond those bare minimums was really important.
I think so, and kind of reading it as well, it's you can become part of this community instead of, well, we're doing what we want, but we'll include you anyway, which, words like friendly and inclusive tend to bring about. And I think what's really important in everything you've done is the approach that you've had in terms of people living, everybody. I won't name all the groups, but basically everybody's been involved, which they should be.
I think we're so lucky with the team we've had. We had a few partners that joined the research team right from the start, people with dementia and care partners, of course, but also, the City of Kitchener, the Alzheimer's Society, different levels of organizations. But then when we actually brought together our community workshops to do, that real planning and nuanced thinking, we had incredible representation. Transportation has been a huge supporter, police services, various health centers, businesses, places of worship, all levels. And it was really, some of them had been involved in work with dementia before and others had not. It was really incredible to see people come together and become passionate about it and really think about how they could construct a different community from the perspective of people living with dementia. So I feel like we are very lucky to have this team together.
Certainly. And did you find it with some organisations that they were kind of there and ready to go, but nobody had actually asked them, and they hadn't been included in the conversation before?
I think that some of the organizations had a clear mandate towards accessibility inclusion of everyone in their communities. And so those were the ones that we got an immediate yes from. And that included, police services, for example, who are really thinking about community building. So it's beyond safety, but building community. But hadn't necessarily been around the table for dementia specifically before. So it was an obvious part of their mandate, which enabled them to say yes immediately. But you're right that they hadn't thought of this specific context before.
And I guess they all kind of learn a little bit from each other, because I guess, you were getting them all together in the room. They probably didn't all know what each of them did in that kind of detail.
Yeah, it really helped, I think, map accessibility issues like right from, your home, where you're living, to the destinations you want to get to. Because often it's a different organization, a different member that influenced those parts or along the way. Whether it was the planners who design streets and sidewalks and building requirements to transportation requirements to businesses that interact with you who get in the door. But to have a fully capable community, you need all of those to be accessible and not just one step or the other. And so, I mean, that was our vision from the start, is really thinking about bringing these levels together and understanding how they work. And we were, I mean, it's going to take a lot more work as we continue to go forward, but it's been an incredible start. And we continue to have all those conversations to, now that we have a plan, to actually make sure it goes beyond that and is being put into action.
Yeah, I guess it's, opening the door, isn't it? And, when you think of clearer communication, thoughtful design, better transport, etc., then great. People living with dementia, but actually, it's great for the community because there's loads of stuff that goes on that everybody looks around and says, well, why did they do that?
100%. That these, things that make the community accessible to people with dementia also make it accessible for people with all sorts of different abilities, whether it's people with sensory differences or, intellectual and cognitive differences, mobility differences, it accessible improving accessibility influences every member of the community. And I think as we've been working towards implementation, often it's not a dementia specific standard, but it's looking at how the standards can be altered to, the common standards can be altered to better include everyone. So we've been working and having really great conversations with, the accessibility group for the region, with planners who are altering recommendations for the built environments, and the facility plan. So yeah, it continues on, but it's not a dementia line within those. It's a line, we're just altering the general guidelines to make them more accessible for everyone.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, because, am I right in thinking you've got the Accessible Canada Act?
Yes.
That basically says a barrier-free society by 2040. So, it's all moving towards that, isn't it?
Exactly. We're finally seeing changes in accessibility standards that don't just, until very recently, it was really just about physical abilities and they ignored everything else. Now, as they're revising standards, they openly address that. Use the UN CRPD, Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability Act, or convention to their definition of what disability is and the different conditions and the interaction with location. and well, the social and built environment. And so it's changing gradually, but and 2040 is still a long way off, but at least we know that broad abilities are now being considered when they're developing those standards and policy, which is
Yeah,
so good.
you've got a target, haven't you? And a roadmap in how to get there. I was reading the other day. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. The City of Waterloo has now adopted the invisible disability lanyards. Is that right?
Oh, that is a good question. Maybe you're I would believe you.
I saw it on the BBC News actually, but. Whether it was, but anyway, it's I think it's.
You are correct.
Thank
So
you.
I feel
Okay.
bad. I have
No.
seen people using them, but I didn't know it was a formal adoption. It was, to be fair, 4 days ago. So you are very on top of it. But yes, they have the hidden disability sunflower lanyard, which I think will be a great process for people understanding abilities in the community.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I think one of the people that you work with in your approach was Jim Mann, wasn't it? Who's over there in BC. And I remember Jim talking to me a lot about the fact that he has worn a lanyard for a long time.
Yeah.
And if people ask him, they'll say, "Well, it's because of this," and suddenly it takes all that mystery away.
Exactly. It just opens the door to that conversation. And the challenge is not everyone's ready to wear the lanyard. So we've had a lot of conversation as we've built, tools for other projects around, the card and the and then the lanyard. And we've developed, those for our context because at least it gives a pe person the option of communicating that. And I think, the more I'm sure we all agree, you have this podcast, for example, the more we talk about dementia and types, the more change will be possible. Having it as a silent challenge is not helpful to anyone in the long run.
No, not at all. And I kind of equate it to my grandmother was an old Victorian Londoner, and when she and her friends in the pub were together, and the C word, cancer at the time, was mentioned, then everything went quiet. Nobody wants to talk at all. Well, now we talk about that fairly openly, but the D word is still it's the elephant in the room a little bit that people don't talk about.
That's right. And we actually have one of our partners that we've worked with dementia said the exact same thing on one of our videos. She said her grandmother had cancer. She never talked about it. She didn't know about it until years later. And it's the same thing with dementia. And we just have to bring it up in conversation so that the fear is lost.
And I think it is so important that involving people living with dementia right at the basis of what you start, because listeners will know, a few years ago when I started this, I was at Dementia Action Alliances, looked around the room and said, "There's someone missing," and they looked at me and said, "Who?" And I said, "Well, someone living with dementia," because I can't tell what they want; they can't tell me. And I think it was one of your videos I saw with the lady wanting to bus to go to the library. And I thought that was great. I mean, this is where it should be and how it should start, isn't it?
Absolutely. When I started doing research and research in dementia, I didn't know this was an option of how to do research. I started in epidemiology and all the numbers, and then I gradually did more clinical work, and then I just was lucky to talk with Sherry Dupuy, who has done a lot of work and the groundwork for participatory research and involving people living with dementia and research in Canada. And I feel so lucky. One, I just enjoy it so much more. And I learn so much as I go. And it helps really identify where the critical issues are that we might want to go next is listening to people with dementia and learning what the real challenges are rather than guessing. I do want to say Kathleen, who was in the video, was of course, she was part of our research team along with Jim Mann. But she was at one of the workshops that we had as part of the Dementia Capable Community Project. And she uses accessible transport in the region regularly, but she had had a frustrating experience in the re in the month prior to this meeting. And she happened to get seated with someone from our Grand River Transit and who oversaw the accessible transit. And at some point she said, "Look, I just need to say this. I have had this issue, which was around communication in the system. It's been a huge challenge. It was very frustrating. But you know, like having them both at the table meant that 2 weeks from then, it was changed. And she hasn't had the same frustration since. So having them together in the same room means that things get changed, right? You see the personal impact. And I think that's so important.
I think it's vital. And taking the stigma away, that I know people living with dementia say that, the first thing that happens when you're diagnosed is everything gets taken away. And it's don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. Give me this. And it's having that feeling that, there is a person there who has views, they have feelings exactly the same as the person you're talking to. And maybe if you're from a transport authority, you probably never had the ability, perhaps, to talk to someone living with dementia, and so don't naturally believe any of all that.
Exactly. And I when I reviewed, when I started diving deeper into the literature about stigma and dementia, the real thing to me that stands out is that the most effective interventions, whether they're, choirs or performances or videos, are the ones where you see a person living with dementia. And that challenges your preconceptions. Because so often your preconceptions are driven by fear and the very end of life stages. And the end of life looks similar for almost every condition, right? You lose mobility, you have challenges in cognition. That's the same, whether it's cancer or heart failure or dementia. So seeing people, engaging with people, creating a community where people can be out and seen and talked with, I think is so critical for change.
Tears don't care who cries them. They don't care at all. Anytime a heart starts breaking, they will fall and fall. Rich man, poor man, beggar. Tears can fill each eye. They don't care who cries them. You just cry, cry, cry. Once my love and dreams were in your keeping, then you walked away with someone new. Once you laughed at me when I was weeping. Happened to me has happened to you. Tears don't care who cries them, but my eyes are dry. I'm laughing now while you learn how to cry. Once my loving dreams were in your keeping, then you walked away with someone new. Once you laughed at me while I was weeping, what happened to me has happened to you. But my
fitting that I should include one of Canada's finest on the show this week, Katie Lang from the excellent Shadowlands album and Tears Don't Care Who Cries Them. I'm chatting to Laura Middleton from the Schlegel Research Institute for Aging. Yeah, thank you. You know, you're absolutely right. Now, you know, you're in your area, you're in, you know, Waterloo. We've got a kind of mix, haven't you, of urban, suburban, rural areas, which, you know, is I guess, good for your research as well, because you're going to have people saying, well, what about us? We're, you know, we live on farms or whatever. But I guess the big question is, how does it then spread from all the great work you're doing across the country?
Yeah, and that's the next stage. That's the goal. So we've been working to engage additional communities as a next step towards developing detailed actions, you know, probably starting from our dementia capable action plan, community action plan, and then saying, okay, is there anything that needs to be changed and how do we identify how it can be implemented in those communities? So we've already been talking to Prince George, which is in northern BC, for example, about, you know, whether we can bring it there next. But that's our hope. You know, probably is one of the biggest benefits to us is dementia champions and advocates who look at this and say, actually, this is really what we need in our community. It's not just friendly, you know, libraries or you know, leisure programs. It is, you know, this multi-layer step. And so as those advocates are having conversations in their community, they're bringing it alongside, which is really exciting.
And I guess, you know, the involvement and the research you're doing leads to the confidence of people being able to have those conversations. Like you were saying that, you know, the lady with the transport problem, well, maybe if it wasn't for your research and everything you've done, she wouldn't have had the confidence to, you know, say, yeah, hold on a minute.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And it's creating the space and that there's support behind you to have those conversations. And, you know, we would hope that, you know, policymakers listen to individuals, but sometimes having research behind and weight of those institutions helps. Maybe it shouldn't be required, but we know that having an intersection of, you know, lived experience and personal connection and data and the funds are always helpful too, is often what's needed for real change.
Yeah, you know, in terms of the people that you had, transportation, police, planning, community organisations, was there anybody there with their hands on the purse strings, to put it simply?
Well, the good news is, yeah, I mean, locally, there's a few things that are being updated that helps us leverage those processes. So City of Waterloo is updating their age-friendly plan. Now, age-friendly plans are somewhat notoriously better for including very healthy older adults than people with a variety of abilities. So can we integrate into that plan and layer the changes needed for more diverse communities? You know, they are updating the, trying to think what it is, but it's essentially the outdoor design of the community and those guidelines. So can we insert, you know, our dementia friendly? They are updating the accessible facilities guidance. So can we, again, insert what we need into those? And so then we're leveraging funding that's invested and adding our needs on top. So that's been our strategy so far, because I think, well, I would love to have, you know, the investment really for dementia-capable communities, and that it creates accessibility for everyone, I think. There's a lot of people with mandates towards accessibility broadly. So can we make sure that when they're thinking about accessibility, they're thinking of people with dementia within who has a right to have access in the community and fully participate?
Yeah, well, it sounds like a good plan to me anyway, in terms of doing that. And I guess the other area is those people that have become the policymakers, and, you know, the police and the transport planners of the future in terms of, you know, the kids in high school and their knowledge and, you know, appreciation.
And it's certainly an area that I'm passionate about. I know you had Phyllis on to talk about our Dementia Youth Alliance. So it started really through a conversation that we had on the phone, her kids being so, passionate about supporting her, my kids having learned from attending one of our dementia capable community workshops and participating, and then spreading word to their friends in carpools and at their activities. And now we have a Dementia Youth Alliance at the university who's doing their first outreach to a school next week. And so I fully agree that targeting, the people of the future, because they don't have stigma of dementia, right? So can we give them a deep understanding of what dementia is and how we can support and how they can be valued members of the community before they ever have any stigma? I feel like that's the real route to the future. And so we're hoping that the Dementia Youth Alliance will be part of that.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Self-lost and all your confidence is gone, and the stars over your head through the clouds won't be revealed. I'll walk with you even if it's uphill. When the weight of your troubles sends your knees into the dirt and all your loyal distractions only magnify the hurt. Lonesome doesn't quite define how so alone you feel. I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Hard times and landslides are part of life, I know. Like they say, none of us get out alive. But every ocean you're swimming across, every mountain you climb, I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Blessed are the times filled with sun, surrounded by your friends. Those days when all the new roads wait right where the old roads end. Should you wake up to every stride outside your windowsill, I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Hard times and landslides, a bottle I've got knows. We all got some mountains to climb. Whatever ocean you're swimming across, however valley low, I'm right here, I've been right here all this time. Even if it's uphill, I'll walk with you. Even if it's uphill.
Laurie McKenna and Up a Hill. We're busy planning our autumn programme here on the D Word. tdwradio@gmail.com is the email to get in touch. Always great to hear your dementia stories. Dementia Capable Communities is this week's topic with my guest, Laura Middleton. Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, children have this innate ability not to judge, don't they? Which, you know, it perfectly means that you can, you know, not produce those kind of stigmas that have been around for a long, long time. Yeah. But also, you know, you need the adults leading in the right direction, and you need the whole package which you've got there. What's come out of this conversation, actually, is me thinking, well, why are we not spreading dementia-capable communities beyond Canada? Dementia is a worldwide problem. We've all got similar issues. So why are we not all saying dementia-capable?
That is a good question. You know, I think we are, well, one, we're using dementia-friendly because it's been the name that's been taken up broadly. And so people are sticking with it because they don't like to change sometimes. But I agree, like having, you know, real alliances to plan this out across countries, I think is essential. Building off of each other and leveraging each other's works when we can is, you're just giving me more impetus to kind of reach out and get that done. Because it is, I mean, again, the dementia capable, that wasn't our word. It came from Kate Swaffer in Australia and, you know, reading some of what she, this is, and I actually, I don't know if she'll remember this or if she listens to this podcast, but I had read one of her blogs and she had a quote about, you know, ripples in the ocean are no longer enough. And so we actually started off our grant with her quote. I had asked her for permission if we could put it in because I thought it captured it so well. And that, you know, that was really our challenge, is that we needed to bring together all the people around the table to address this challenge. So,
yeah, and I guess it's, you know, in doing that, if you put it on the worldwide perspective, then it will be transportation people in Canada who will talk to transportation people in the UK and in Australia and police. And suddenly everybody will realise that they've all got loads in common, and, you know, it would be a much better way to do it. Because I guess a small bit with what you're doing in Waterloo, what comes in my mind is, if somebody wants to get a bus to the library, then terrific. But if they want to get out, say, a GO train into Toronto, then suddenly you're kind of a little bit outside your remit.
Yes. At this point, we've primarily targeted locally, but Toronto would certainly be on our short list of community. A different challenge, a different size and of community, but that would, I mean, it's required for anyone in Southern Ontario to fully participate. You're going to have to make Toronto access, you know, dementia capable as well, because that's where, you know, the Blue Jay game on, you're wearing your Blue Jay shirt there. If they want to go and participate in that, we need the stadiums to be, you know, accessible, and the GO train to be accessible, because that's probably how we'd get down there. And, you know, you're absolutely right that it requires connection across communities, and having one little space is at the end not enough either.
Well, I hope I'm giving you too much work, Laura, with everything we've been talking about, because, you know, it's the biggest can of worms, isn't it? Once you start opening this door, then, you know, you just find more and more rooms behind it.
Absolutely. And that's the case with, you know, any good project. It's exciting. Like, It's only projects that don't work out that stop at the end date of, you know, the funding of their project. The other ones, you just want to keep going and growing. And how do we get, you know, capacity and funds sometimes to do the next stages? But that's the exciting piece of it. So hopefully if you open the door, it is that kind of that tidal wave that continues to push you for it. That's it. That's a positive, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, in your initial engagement with people living with dementia, you've got a real force there that's pushing, because you do open the door, and quite rightly they're saying, well, yeah, hold on a minute, why are you not doing this for us? And why is that happening? And whatever. And, you know, again, it's okay, you know, a ripple in a bond may not be enough, but that's a start of a wave which goes towards all those organisations and, you know, hopefully meets the politicians, which then means that the whole thing kind of comes into fruition.
That's right. That's right. And it's all building as you build. I mean, so much, everything is, you know, relationships, right? Like you build connections with different people and in different cities and in different levels of action. And hopefully it becomes, you know, that tidal wave, that positive tsunami towards change from that little tremor in the ocean. It kind of builds up, right?
Yeah.
Do you really lean into the analogy?
Yeah, absolutely. You know that. You know, it's what we're trying to do in a very small amount on this show, is just to get people talking. And also, you know, we're 3,000 miles apart, but we're talking about people that we both know.
Yes.
And then it kind of, you know, it's amazing that it is really, you know, it is a small world, to use a cliche.
Absolutely. I think I look back to when there was more activity on Twitter, back when it was Twitter and before it became X. It was the real reason that I got onto Twitter was to connect with dementia advocates and see what was being said across the world. And I got to have tea over, I don't know if you remember that, Wendy Mitchell was having tea over Zoom during the pandemic. So I got to have tea with Wendy on one of her Zoom calls. And so we do, I mean, the only positive that came from the pandemic is probably our ability to connect even better, you know, over distances. And so it's, yeah, it's a real pleasure. And these relationships, yeah, we do know all sorts of people in common, is how we build momentum.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, Wendy was a great friend of the show. She was a terrific, terrific lady. I always remember Wendy's jargon jar when she used to go in with any of the medical profession. And when they tried to blind her with science, Wendy would just get this jar out and shake it and say, now tell me in English, can you put some money in there for charity? Which I've never forgotten, which is terrific.
You know, that was one of the good things about this project, too. You know, we have my co-lead, and I should mention Samantha Biglieri is a planner. She's a faculty member at Toronto Metropolitan University and is a planner by training. And so her language and terms often would be very different from what I'd use from, you know, the more health sciences perspective. And so it forced us to confront all that jargon and really simplify down languages that everyone could understand across, you know, specialties. So that's been a great lesson for all of us, I think, on the team.
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, that's a really good point. Sadly, time is bringing us to a little bit of a close. Just like I say, it's been really fascinating. And this whole dementia capable communities thing is something that, you know, I want to champion about on the show. I think other people should, because, you know, we've heard you describe it over the past 40 minutes or so. And it really is the logical way forward for all this and the ability to make some change. So I just want to applaud you in what you've done in it. And, you know, everybody there at the Schlegel Institute and everyone else that's worked on it. And, you know, I think it's a terrific project.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to come here and chat and see eye to eye on so many things, and to have a chance to talk about, you know, the Dementia Capable Community Project well beyond, you know, our little area of Canada. So hopefully it brings opportunities to connect more. And as we said, spread dementia capable communities well beyond our our local community across, you know, beyond Canada and, you know,
Yeah, it will
country.
be talked about here on the D Word. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Hopefully, I'll be visiting in July, and we'll get a chance once again to go over and touch base with our mutual friend Phyllis Fair and a few people, which would be great.
Excellent. Well, maybe I'll get to meet you in person. That would
Well,
be wonderful.
excellent stuff. Well, for now, anyway, Laura, it's been a real pleasure. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.
Thanks to Laura for giving a great introduction into dementia-capable communities. And that's something we'll certainly keep an eye on in the future. And if you want to find out more, then it's all at the website dementiawellness.com. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, my guest will be Glenna Hecht, author of How Old Are You Today? The story of a game that transformed a relationship with a mother who is living with dementia. So until then, thanks for your company and take care now.